I once saw a rat sat on the microwave, like his little legs were dangling.
You are joking.
No, no, no. So, like, so I hate rats. This film, I kind of left. I was like, do I like rats now?
Hello and welcome to the Danjo Film Show, episode 44. We've hit the 40s, we've hit the menopause stage now.
We're well into our 40s by now, yeah.
Frisky at 40, Joe, you know what they
say. Absolutely. I'm 50.
Absolutely.
Sexy 60s.
Oh, yeah.
Slutty 70s. I'll bleep that out.
Yeah, we're not. Hope you're well. Thank you so much for listening to everybody at home, whatever you're up to. Maybe you're set in your 70s at home, and that's okay with us. We like them in 70s, don't we?
Yeah. For grandmothers, grandparents, maybe.
Yeah. We're back in the studio.
It's been a while.
We've had a bit of a hiatus. I've been on holiday.
Yes, you have.
Soaking up the sun with my dangly legs.
Yeah, your little gangly legs. On the beach in Tembe.
Love that tweet that you put out. It was really, really made me feel great.
Good. I'm glad. You know, I did say lovely gangly legs.
You did, yeah.
You know, I didn't say, like, ugly gangly legs.
And I said worse to you, haven't I?
Oh, absolutely. Like, you'd probably say worse on this show. I just had visions of you stressing out on the beach. Because you're not a beach person, really, are you?
Oh, I'm not. But you know what? I did proper make the effort. And we went twice to the beach because we went to Tembe in South Wales. And it's pretty much all there is a beach. So you have to go. You can't get, you know, go for a week and try and get out of it.
Yeah.
You know, so I did have to go. One time it was lovely, lovely and hot. Second time it did start to rain a little bit.
Yeah.
So I did get very, very wet. But I went to the sea. You know, I went in the cold. I put my feet in a little bit. And, you know, I did go. I had a little swim in the sea. No sharks or jellyfish, thank goodness.
Good.
And that's always good. I've had a lovely holiday. It's great to be back. How have you been? Because I know it's been a good couple of weeks, hasn't it, since we did a show?
I've obviously missed you. For anybody who doesn't know, by the way, Dan is very much like Anakin Skywalker in Attack of the Clones, where he talks about sand, about how he hates sand. It's like, I hate sand. That is Dan. Danakin Skywalker, we're going to start calling you. But yeah, I've been fine. I've been great. Like, same old for me. I'm actually going away next week now.
So we'll probably
have a little bit of a break between this show and the next.
It's my chance now to cry and sob in the shower.
Exactly. Yep. So I'll be going away next week again. I'll be going down sort of Tembe Way, Manabia. Mm. So I'll be hitting the beach.
Yeah.
A couple of castles.
And you love sand, don't you?
I love sand.
Get it all
in.
Get all nooks and crannies, isn't it?
Absolutely.
There's nothing better than getting home 2 weeks later, right? Yeah. And then looking at your toes, a little bit of sand in there.
Yeah, you love that.
That would be
you?
My nightmare. That would be your pleasure.
No, definitely. I love sand. Mm. Everything sand related, I love, you know, sandwiches, the Sandman, he puts you to sleep.
Yeah.
Enter Sandman, great song by Metallica, which I'm sure you're very familiar with.
So
I'm away next week, but nothing else really to report, just the usual work. It's been really nice going to the cinema recently. Saw a good couple of films on Saturday, which we're going to be talking about today. But I have got an interesting bit of news for you, Dan, which I haven't actually revealed to you yet. Literally before I was meeting you today. Have you seen The Circle on Channel 4?
I have seen The Circle. I've seen bits. I know there's the US version as well.
Is on Netflix, is on Netflix. So I love The Circle. Yeah. And I applied to go on The Circle. And then they cancelled The Circle.
No.
Yeah, so they cancelled it. But it might be picked up by Netflix. When you're applying for these shows, they always ask, tick this box if you'd be interested in appearing on any other show.
Okay.
So I've had an email from Channel 4 today.
Oh my gosh.
Asking if I wanted to audition for Naked Attraction.
Oh, yes! Yes, you have to do it. Are you kidding me right now?
No, I've got the email on my phone.
You are joking.
Saying, "Hi Joe, remember when you ticked that box when applying for The Circle? We're now taking guests for Naked Attraction."
That's how they get their guests, don't they?
Yeah.
They feed off the pity of not getting another show.
I mean, it's sort of working because I'm thinking about it. You know, I'm definitely considering it.
Oh, mate, what have you got to lose apart from your dignity and respect and family members?
And everything, yeah. You know, I don't want our podcast listeners to, you know, be able to put not just a name to the face of the name.
Lots of things.
Lots
big
of things
small.
To the name. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I'm going to say, this is exciting. I'm going to say, go for it.
Yeah.
And if you don't, I will.
I mean, yeah, I could put your name for that would be savage. I should do that.
We could do it together. We could share a little box, couldn't we? Oh my goodness.
That would be great. I think Hannah, I need to talk to Hannah.
It's a big decision, isn't it?
I mean,
she doesn't want to come home one night, turn the TV and see your junk.
Exactly. I mean, she's a very understanding girlfriend, but I definitely need to run it by her. But
yeah.
I will broach that subject next time I see her. Just casually. Hey, you remember Naked Attraction?
It's a big milestone in every relationship. Everyone's been there, you know? Everyone's applied for it.
Absolutely.
It's all crossed our minds, but wow, that's amazing. So potentially we could be seeing a bit more of you than what I'm seeing right
now. Maybe, and who knows? Maybe that's just the start. Maybe come dine with me. Maybe four in a bed.
Yeah.
I don't own a B&B, but I'd gladly go along to four of them.
Yeah, I think you'd rather that, wouldn't you? I think you'd rather buy a B&B just to appear on that.
I think so, yeah. Do they still do Deal or No Deal? I don't know.
That time has passed. But, you know, you can't
blame
no
evidence.
There we go.
So, yeah, keep an eye out. We'll keep you updated.
Yeah. Well, I mean, tweet us. Get in touch if you would like to see Joe.
We'll do a poll.
But generally, you know, not just that, you can follow us on social media. We're on Facebook under the Dan Joe Film Show. We're on Twitter and Instagram at DJ Film Show. Get the hashtag going. Joe Naked. Naked Joe Traction. That'd be good.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Oh, brilliant, Joe. Oh, well, you've had a very exciting, much more exciting couple of days than I have. Then.
Well, I don't think so at all. We'll see what happens, though.
We will see what happens. Absolutely. We've got lots to talk about today. Lots of great movies out. We are going to be reviewing some new releases coming out, today as we release it. So we're reviewing Matt Damon's new film, Stillwater.
Matt Damon.
I love that. You'll be reviewing The Last Letter of Your Lover, which is the new kind of British romantic
drama. You've probably seen it. It's probably made you feel a bit queasy.
Yeah, Nicholas Sparks, he's there, isn't he? He's there. Also, the hotly anticipated DC's Suicide Squad. It's kind of the reboot, standalone sequel of the last one that didn't do very well, did it? And also, you know, we've all been on that theme park ride, haven't we? Jungle Cruise.
Who hasn't?
I mean, yeah. Like, Dwayne is true. We've all been there, haven't we?
Yeah.
I remember it vividly. We're going to be reviewing Jungle Cruise with Dwayne Johnson, Emily Blunt, fresh from Quiet Place 2. She's a busy girl.
She is.
And Jack Whitehall, who's just made it. I mean, I think he could be the next James Corden.
We've got a lot to talk about when it comes to that, I think, for sure.
Definitely. But should we get into some news? You've got to, you know, grab a wine because it's time for Dan Joe's headlines. Okay, in film news this week, the trailer for the sequel to Venom has dropped, and it's titled Venom, Let There Be Carnage, as if we've needed more of that from the last 18 months, right, Joe?
I know, tell me about it.
It's crazy out there. Tom Hardy was actually spotted down Barry Island in South Wales a few weeks ago, filming for Venom 3. Did you know that?
I had no idea.
I know, Joe. I mean, he just cannot stop with this. Fans were delighted to see him, especially to find out that they've released a title for the third instalment already. I know. And I think a lot of Barry Islanders are going to be happy. It's called Venom. What's occurring?
It's Dave Coach is going to be in it as well.
Definitely.
Scarlett Johansson is filing a lawsuit against Disney for breaching her contract by releasing Black Widow on Disney Plus and in theatres simultaneously. As a result, Emma Stone is contemplating pursuing a legal case with Cruella. And Russia is also filing a lawsuit against Ray Winston for his awful Russian accent in Black Widow. Good job, Ray.
Still better. Thanks, Joe. And finally, Russell Crowe. What a guy.
What a guy.
Some would say he saved cinema last year. I would agree. I think his body alone saves cinema. He's played many iconic roles in his career, hasn't he? He played Maximus in Gladiator, Robin Hood, Noah, and that overweight guy with road rage. Forgot about that one. It seems that he'll be adding directing to his resume as he takes the helm of his first feature debut titled Poker Face, which is currently being filmed under very strict COVID regulations in Sydney, Australia, mate. They're very strict with COVID. You see it, you swap it, you know what I'm saying? Apparently, the restrictions are so strict, if anyone on set breaks them, Russell will track you down and beat you with a hammer. I'm just kidding, and he does that on weekends. Okay, he's not an animal, people. And that's your headlines. Now finish that wine.
Yo, is this a dog?
What?
Is this thing a dog?
A dog?
Yes.
What? What kind of dog do you think it is, mate?
I don't know. I'm not familiar with all the breeds.
I'm going to go with Afghan Hound.
Where does an Afghan Hound have bloody thumbs?
Oh, my God. Is it a werewolf? I wanted to meet a werewolf forever.
Yo, they sent me into a werewolf?
That's not right.
Yo, let me out. I'm not a werewolf.
He's not a werewolf, okay? He's a weasel. He's harmless. I mean, he's not harmless. He's killed 27 children. But, you know, we got him to... I think he's agreed to do this. Whatever the case, just everyone get into position to drop.
And that was a clip there from Suicide Squad, directed by James Gunn. He's had quite a ride, hasn't he, James Gunn? He's had a good couple of years.
He's had a good, crazy couple of years.
He has. And obviously, this is the reboot standalone sequel based on the DC Comics Suicide Squad, which came out a couple of years ago, directed by David Ayer. Didn't do too well with fans, you know. So everyone was calling for a new one, and James Gunn kind of jumped ship from Marvel to DC. But he's still also with Marvel too. He's two-timing them, isn't he, James?
Well, yeah. I mean, he sort of had no choice in that relationship. No. Disney were kind of like, you need to go. You need to get out.
Yeah, you know, you got to jump before you
push. And he found someone else. He found someone better.
Yeah.
Found somebody a bit prettier. Yeah. And Disney were like, oh, come back. We want you back.
We're jealous.
Yeah, we're jealous. It's like Love Island.
It is, isn't it? Definitely. I would love to see that. This time around, you've got some of the familiar characters. You've got Margot Robbie in here playing Harley Quinn. She's back. You've also got some new characters joining the Suicide Squad. You've got Idris Elba, who plays Bloodsport. You've also got John Cena, you know, Peacemaker, playing here. We all love John Cena. Joel Kinnaman is back playing Colonel Rick. And they're all under the control of Viola Davis's character, who plays Amanda Waller. She picks out all these really bad superheroes from prison. And she says to them, basically, you need to complete this mission. You need to stop this madman, this kind of government from taking over the world using this kind of alien technology. And if you do that, then we'll take years off your prison sentence. However, if you disobey me, there's a little ticking time bomb in the back of your neck, which will explode and blow your head up. So it's like, what choice do they have, you know? I was skeptical about this one because I revisited the first Suicide Squad film by David Ayer, and I remember going to see it years ago when I was a wee little boy. Well, not a wee little boy, I wasn't like nine, don't worry, kids. And I thought, oh, it's okay, it's fine, you know. I know it got a lot of hate, a lot of criticism for it, and then I revisited it very recently and I was like, oh, okay, I understand now. And I think the big issues with that film is the script, is the editing. It's been botched in post-production. I don't know whether having a David Ayer cut like they did with Justice League, I don't know whether that would have helped with things, to be honest with you, because I don't feel like there was that much material that was really good anyway, you know? Mm. With the Snyder cut, there was loads he had left over. With this, I don't know. So I'm all for a new Suicide Squad. Now, I saw the trailers, it looked kind of a bit of a mess. It looked very chaotic, looked very zany and crazy and over the top, very bloody and gory. And I was not sure about it, but I have to say, I absolutely adored this film. I really did. I think it takes everything wrong with the previous version and makes it right. Now, it doesn't do that by being a perfect film, because this isn't a perfect film. I think that's why a lot of people are getting in their knickers in a tizzy, because they're looking at the Rotten Tomatoes score of like 100% and thinking, well, it's a perfect movie. I think what that means is everyone's really, really enjoyed it. And I think this is the summer blockbuster I really wanted to see, you know? We had F9, eh. We had Black Widow, eh. They were okay. This is the summer season right now. This film is ridiculously gory, violent beyond extreme, paced incredibly well. The film is so entertaining. It is 2 hours long, right? And I could not leave. My eyes were glued to the screen. I was immersed in it. And a lot of that has to do with the direction. Obviously, James Gunn is very familiar with this territory. But a lot of it has to do with the fact that these characters are so creatively written. They're really quirky. They all have their little charm and characteristics. And loads of them die. Like, and this is the thing I think that we struggle with, don't we, franchises, where people get really afraid.
Yeah.
Like the Fast and Furious franchise, where they basically do everything to save every single character.
Yeah, like literally anything.
Yeah, and I think the issue is with that is there's no stakes, there's no risks, there's no weight to the story. This film, it's like you don't know who's going to get killed off. You really, really don't. And I really love that about this film, that it does take those risks, and you really don't know which character's going to be killed off in all the gruesome ways. I thought the performances are great. I still think Margot Robbie is fantastic as Harley Quinn. She just embodies that character so well. She has a nice little subplot in this too. Idris Elba, though, for me, he is great. He has this subplot involving his daughter, which they tried to do with Will Smith. It's done so much better here.
Yeah.
And again, it's because it's paced better. There's great editing. And I think they just fit a lot more into a two-hour runtime, but it still doesn't feel bloated because it's effectively edited. The direction is there. It doesn't feel like it's going on a tangent in this with a certain character. There's enough room for all of them. And there's also enough room to kill a lot of them too, which, you know, which is important because we can't even have like 20 Suicide Squad characters, can we, really? I love this so much. I'm going to be seeing it lots more times. I want to see it again in the cinema. I just think, you know, it's in there. It's one of my favourite films of the year. It was close to getting a full five for me. Not quite. I think the middle act does slow down a little bit for me. But that final act, I was just gripped by it. I think James Gunn is just a prodigy. He's done the impossible. You know, he's taken something that was very dull and lifeless and injected a lot of creativity and fun to it, which I love. So I adored this, as you can probably tell. What about you?
I thought it was an absolute blast. And I think James Gunn is just a perfect fit for this type of story, this type of property. I think obviously he's coming from Guardians of the Galaxy, so obviously he's got that behind him already. And if you think of Guardians of the Galaxy as, you know, that kind of poppy soundtrack that goes along with it, that's his pop movies. This is his punk movie. And what I really loved about it is not only does it have all those things that you just mentioned, you know, it has those incredible performances, especially from Margot Robbie, who, you're absolutely right, does embody Harley Quinn. She was born to play that role. But you've also got this brilliant like subtext. It's like an anti-establishment movie. You've got Ratcatcher 2, who is quickly becoming one of the film's favorite characters.
Totally.
She's got a fantastic arc in this movie. I mean, I hate rats. When I mean, in when I was in uni, I rented a place in my second year on Cates Terrace.
You are joking.
No, and it had the door, like the front door, just had a massive gap, like, and rats were just coming in and out.
Oh.
I once saw a rat sat on the microwave, like his little legs were dangling.
You are joking.
No. So like, So I hate rats because I've had that experience.
Still not the worst rated place in Cates.
Yeah. But this film, I kind of left. I was like, do I like rats now? Because Sebastian the rat is so adorable.
He's so cute.
So cute. Mm. And what James Gunn does really well, he basically uses this character of Ratcatcher 2. Her father is Ratcatcher 1, played by a very recognisable person who I won't spoil.
No.
And he basically uses this concept of rats being like the nobodies and basically rising up to take on, you know, the establishment as a really cool, again, punky sort of like metaphor for the film. So I loved that aspect of it. I thought it had that political like substance to it as well, which I really liked. But James Gunn also, he's not working for Disney at the moment with this, you know, so he gets to return to his horror roots. He gets to make the gore, the blood. He gets to basically let loose with it. And I think that's why a lot of people are a little bit disappointed, because David Ayer, the impression that we get with that, and Zack Snyder, is that Warner Brothers were very much like, right, we need you to do this. We don't want you to do that. In this instance, they sort of learned from their mistakes. They've gone, James Gunn, very popular director, let's let him just have free reign and do whatever he likes with it. And I think he's said that, like, that was part of the stipulations of him coming on board. He was like, I'll do it, but you've got to let me do what I want to do. So he's getting to do, basically use all the toys from his, you know, toy box. He gets to, you know, have all, everything that he wants to do, he gets to do with it. The gore, the blood, the comedy, the vulgarity of it. But it has got that heart as well. It's got that same heart of Guardians. And what's great as well is that it makes you care about the characters. And, you know, like I said, a lot of people die in this film, but there's one particular death in towards the end of the movie, which I was really, like, gutted about. Mm. And it was like he was channeling Saving Private Ryan. You know, there's a moment in Saving Private Ryan where the guy's fighting the Nazi and he gets stabbed. Yeah. There's a moment in this film which is very similar, kind of pulling that sort of reference. And it was brutal. And I was really sort of like fighting for this character to win and to survive. Like you said, it is a perfect blockbuster. It was like the summer season had finally arrived. I was a little bit worried about the runtime, but compared to the next film we're going to talk about,
oh boy,
this film flew by. I did not check my watch once.
Yeah, that's true.
I loved it. I could have easily, and it's very rare I say this, I could have easily have gone back in and watched it again straight afterwards.
Totally.
And then compared to the next film we're going to talk about. But yeah, I think it's a big, bold summer blockbuster, popcorn movie. It's not going to be for everyone. If you don't like your vulgarity, your violence, things like that, don't go and watch it. But I just think it's so colourful, so zany, great characters in it. King Shark, we got to talk a little bit about that. Sylvester Stallone, brilliant, and just ticks all the boxes for me. So really, really loved it.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, keep up the good work, James.
And it's my favourite of the DCEU films, I'd say, so far.
Well, I mean, let's not get too hasty now, Joe.
I mean, I know yours is Aquaman, but, you know, I would say that this is probably my favourite.
I mean, James Gunn can pull all that, you know, gory tricks, but my heart still lies with Jason Momoa, you know? They didn't need to do that. They were happy with Little Mermaid territory right there, okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just kidding. Who knows?
We've actually had some comments on the Suicide Squad from our lovely listeners on Twitter. We've got Katie at Katie is a film fan. Good for you. It's definitely an improvement over its predecessor, as it's vibrant, unapologetically violent, fast-paced, action-packed, and also very funny. I think we both agree with
you've
those.
You've hit it the nail on the head there. Well done.
Josh Barton, our man, our guy.
Our bit on the side.
He says, it's big, it's pretty dumb, but it's a hell of a lot of fun. The cast are having a blast, and so will audiences around the world. King Shark is a great new addition, and Margot Robbie is the MVP, again, as Harley Quinn. James Gunn knows how to deliver the goods with oddball characters. And finally, Sam at Sam Shaw Media says, it's everything the first film should have been. Masterfully paced, visually stunning, and an absolute blast from beginning to end. So, all incredibly positive things.
Moving on now, should we talk about Jungle Cruise?
If we have to.
Come on, you've missed The Rock.
We've all missed him.
Those muscles have just gotten bigger, haven't they?
They have.
He's a force to be reckoned with, isn't he? Yeah. So, Jungle Cruise, should we play a clip?
I'll talk a little bit about it beforehand, because the clip isn't the best of clips.
Okay.
It's very hard to find a clip for this film, which isn't
so
either
much language, isn't
4 minutes long of just talking, or a short clip of people going, which is what we've gone for. I'll just give a little bit of history behind it before we play the clip. So this is based off of the classic theme park ride at Disney, and that sounds strange that they'd make a film about that, but obviously they did it with Pirates of the Caribbean and it was incredibly successful. So now they're back with Jungle Cruise, starring The Rock and Emily Blunt, two of the most glamorous Hollywood people that we've got at the moment, you know, classic Hollywood stars in the central roles. And then you've got Jack Whitehall. And the plot is, it's set during the First World War. Emily Blunt is looking for the Tree of Life. She's looking to get the petal from the Tree of Life and harness its healing properties for the soldiers coming back from the First World War. She enlists the help of The Rock's Captain Skipper, who basically drives her down the Amazon. Jump in, love. Driving down the Amazon.
Is he a London taxi driver?
Yeah, yeah. To basically find the Tree of Life. Here's a clip.
Come on, I got your pants. Trust me. Hold on!
Frank, get it.
Hold on.
Come on. Frank, please.
I got it.
Frank.
I don't got it.
Frank, get off me. What are you doing?
I'm trying to get traction.
This is ridiculous.
No, wait.
Just leave me alone. That was a disaster.
You're too heavy.
Trying to get traction? What are you doing?
So that's a bit of action-y bit for you there, because, you know, they're trying to find the Tree of Life. They are not only pursued by a German prince who wants to harness the magical properties for, obviously, Germany, but they've also got to fight these sort of, like, spooky monster-type snake people, which are dreadful. I'm probably going to be a little bit harsher on this than most people. And I remember when the premiere happened and when people were getting the press screenings, a lot of people were coming out and they were being very, very positive about it. Like, some people were gushing over it, saying it's brilliant. It's one of the best adventure movies in recent years. So I was excited. I was looking forward to it. Obviously, Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark, is my favourite film of all time. I've virtually studied Indiana Jones, the franchise. The Mummy, which is also getting compared to a lot from the 90s. Loved that film. There was literally a summer where I watched it every single day.
Wow.
For a whole summer
you
when I was off
of
school.
You used to get out of the house a bit more, didn't you?
I did. I was in a small village. and so, like, going in, Jungle Cruise had a lot to do to impress me. And within the first 5 minutes, when it literally steals a joke from Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, when there's, like, a hammering noise and then she, like, does it at the same time, I was like, oh, that's one strike. You're already stealing jokes.
Three strikes and you're out, baby.
Yeah, but I think the main problem I had with the film is it's definitely not Indiana Jones. It's not even Pirates of the Caribbean. I just felt like there was just so much exposition. I found it so boring. I thought, again, it's a long film, like over 2 hours, and I actually timed it as 40 minutes into the film before Emily Blunt and The Rock set off on their actual adventure. I mean, Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, that gets a lot of grief, and that's got a lot of clunky exposition, but I thought this just kind of went above on a whole other level for clunky exposition. You've got the beginning, which says the history about the tree. Then you've got Emily Blunt talking about why they want to find the tree. Then you've got them meeting The Rock and then them talking about why they're going to go get to the tree. And all this while, I was like, I just want something exciting to happen. I want something which just kind of has me engaged. But I just thought it was so dull. And then also you've got these snaky people. And part of the problem is you go back and you look at Dead Man's Chest and you look at the special effects for Davy Jones, and those special effects to this day, there's no beating them. And I just thought the special effects in this film were just so lazy. They were awful. B-Tech. And I was like, come on. Like, really? Like, Pirates of the Caribbean was made, like, years and years ago. And you still are, like, giving me these lazy special effects. So I didn't appreciate that. My nephew, he loved it apparently, but I don't know. I think even as a child I would have been bored, and there were quite a few kids coming in and out through it because of its lengthy runtime. So I think The Rock and Emily Blunt are great. Jack Whitehall is in it.
Yeah, okay. And that's quite nice for you.
Yeah, and I think you know, those two have got enough chemistry where it wasn't like the worst film I've ever seen. But I don't think that it is this kind of return to the action adventure genre that a lot of people are kind of saying either. So it's very subpar. It does start to sink very, very quickly, very early on. And yeah, I just thought, you get Indiana Jones's name out of your mouth.
Oh, wash your mouth out with some indie soap.
Yeah.
Well, I don't have a PhD in Indiana Jones, so I didn't go in with my spectacles on looking for glaring errors here. But I understand what you mean. It is totally marketed, isn't it, as Indiana Jones meets Pirates of the Caribbean, isn't it? Totally. And so I was a bit sceptical going into this because I'd heard that you didn't like it. And the reviews have been mixed. I wouldn't say they've been amazing. Audience scores have really enjoyed it, but I think critics have been very fair, I think. It's, you know, it's been okay. This is directed by Jean-Colette Serra, who I love. He's directed some of my favourite Liam Neeson films. He did that Non-Stop one on the plane.
Yes.
The one on the train, the one in the air. He's done loads of them. And he also directed The Shallows with Blake Lively, which I blimmin' love. So I was excited for this, and I enjoyed it. I did enjoy it. A lot more than you, it seems. I felt like I was on a theme park ride for most of it. It's pretty much not a lot of substance to it, but I liked visually what I was seeing. And you're right, I think Dwayne Johnson and Emily Blunt have great chemistry. Interestingly enough, apparently Emily Blunt wasn't going to go for this role. Ooh. After Mary Poppins and Quiet Place 2, she was really tired and exhausted. And I still think she's done better than this. I still think her character could have a lot more fleshing out. And I hate to say it, I really like Jack Whitehall in this. Because I think I did. I tell you why. Because I think him and Emily Blunt had a nice relationship. I think he has a nice chemistry and rapport with Dwayne Johnson. There's a few couple really funny scenes. And he made me laugh quite a few times in this.
Yeah, but what about this whole thing about him being a gay character then? Because I think for me, that is what let it down as well. The fact that everybody's going, it always seems to be like, oh, this is going to be Disney's first, you know, actual gay character. But then they sort of skirted around the issue again, really. And I think that was a bit of a letdown for me with Jack Whitehall.
I can see that. I think what I'd say is in the time period of it where it's set during World War One, so it's set like 100 years ago, really. I don't think he would be like super like open about it. Mm. I understand what you mean. I think in the context, I like that scene. I thought it was nicely done in that context. You're right, though. I think Disney has still failed to have proper representation.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think as well with Cruella, I think that gay character in there, I'm sorry, I've forgotten the name of the character, but that as well, that was a side, very on the side, wasn't it? Mm. That was better, though, done, I've got to say. And I'm with you, and I think, you know, Disney need to work on that. Maybe this wasn't the film to do it.
Yeah.
Maybe Cruella, they should have really capitalised on it, shouldn't they? Yeah. And been like, made them a really big character. With this, it's like, you're right, either do it really well or don't do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's weird. I agree with you there. I just felt like the three characters, I could have watched them on a boat for 2 hours and I probably would have been quite satisfied because they have that chemistry, there is that humour, there's loads of one-liners and silly jokes and it's just my cup of tea, I like that kind
you
of
like
stuff.
You like the dad jokes.
I do like the dad jokes,
oh,
you know.
I hate the dad jokes. I hate them.
I know you do. But saying that, you're totally right. It's so much exposition, so much heavy storytelling in this, which isn't needed because it's based on a theme park,
right? Exactly.
And 90 minutes into the film to be like, here's the backstory that we forgot about telling you.
Yeah.
And I was just like, this is really silly. We don't need this. You could have had a really thin storyline and just could have made it super fun with some lovely set pieces,
yeah,
and some nice visuals, and I would have been happy. Disney's had a really good year this year, haven't they? I mean, Cruella, Raya and the Last Dragon, it doesn't reach those heights for me. I still had fun with it, though, and I think for families that enjoy it, young kids won't. And I agree with you, there were a couple going out to toilets a lot of the time. It is a long film as well. I didn't feel the length as much as you, but yeah, I think it's one more for families.
Nice. Well, we've actually got a comment. Rachel at To Me That Cinema says, look, I liked it. It felt 90s to me in a good way. Wasn't keen on Whitehall's casting initially, but he was actually not as obnoxious as I was expecting.
Yeah.
Lol.
Wow, Jack Whitehall's going to be so pleased with that, isn't he? He's going to be like, well, I wasn't as annoying as I thought I was going to be.
Yeah.
Here we are.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant.
So if you do, if you've seen Jungle Cruise, if you agree with me, if you agree with Danny, then get in touch at DJ Film Show on Twitter.
Absolutely. Moving on now to Matt Damon. He's back, everybody, in Stillwater, directed by Tom McCarthy, who you know he directed Spotlight a few years ago, won the Oscar for that. This time around, it's based on a semi-true story. It basically follows a father, played by Matt Damon. He lives in Oklahoma. He's a Christian man. He watches Fox News. He eats burgers with beans and sweet corn. He lives the life, basically, you know what I mean? He wears, like, country shirts and a cap and he puts the glasses on the cap, you know, he's a dad. And he's living in Oklahoma, and basically he travels to France quite regularly, basically to check in on his daughter. His daughter, played by Abigail Breslin, has been committed of a crime that she didn't actually take part in. She's innocent and she's been stuck in this French prison for the last 5 years. He has tried very hard to negotiate with the court and the judges to try and set a new date and to try and investigate into it. However, after the judge actually refuses and said, you've got to accept it, there's no way she's getting out of the prison, he takes matters into his own hands and investigates himself. Here's a clip.
Donc, je sais pas, vous voulez bien les regarder un petit peu plus attentivement.
Écoutez, vous montrez l'homme que vous voulez sur les photos, et moi je dirais que je le reconnais, et comme ça c'est réglé. Et je ferai la même chose au tribunal s'il le faut.
Mais attendez, c'est sérieux ce qu'on vous demande là, monsieur.
Mais regardez-les. Ils sont tous coupables de quelque chose là-dedans.
Putain, ok. C'est bon, let's go.
What do you say?
Nothing, he's useless. Merci du coup.
Au revoir, madame. Hey! 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 What happened?
I'm sorry, I can't talk to that guy anymore. He was just saying some horrible things.
Like what?
Like he just wants to put an Arab kid in jail. You know, he doesn't care which one.
That's it?
That's it? What do you mean, that's it? He's a racist.
Okay, he's a racist. We still gotta talk to him.
No, I don't talk to him, no.
Well, he might know something.
No, he doesn't know something. Bill, we're not gonna send an innocent boy to jail.
My daughter is innocent.
What? Oh, I can't believe this conversation.
Well, then, you live in some fancy-ass world, honey, because I work with guys like that all the time.
No, but it doesn't matter, okay? It's not right.
I'm not saying it's right. I'm trying to get my little girl out of jail. That's all I give a fuck about.
And you sound very American right now.
Good, I am.
Yeah, and you're also a stranger here. You don't understand shit. You know what? Vas-y, prends tes trucs, fais ce que tu veux, fais-le sans moi.
Enchanté, s'il vous plaît. Oh, great there. So if you were French listening at home, you would have really enjoyed that clip. So that was Matt Damon there and Camille Cotin, who plays Virginie. Basically, Matt Damon bumps into her. She helps him with the case. They try and investigate. And it's a very kind of tiring journey of them trying to track this guy down. I've got to say, I enjoyed this. We saw this quite recently. I think Matt Damon is great. I think he really disappears into the role of this character. He plays a conservative Republican, somebody who is very much straight-laced. He knows what he believes and doesn't believe. He's going there just to get his daughter back, and he bumps into a lot of obstacles on the way. He gets beaten up. He faces a lot of legal challenges. He almost gets arrested. He's fantastic in this, and I think that obviously there's been a lot of controversy about him in the news. Putting that aside, I think he's really good in this. He is very much, like I said, disappears into the role. Really, really excellent stuff. Abigail Breslin plays his daughter. She had some lovely emotional scenes in this, very powerful, between the two of them at the prison. I really enjoyed Camille Cotton in this, who is the French woman that he befriends in France. And again, it was interesting to see the political divisions between them, what they both believe, you know? And I think it did parallel a lot of what we're experiencing today in terms of politics. I think the conversations they were having was really, really interesting. So I enjoyed this. My issue with it is it's marketed as this very taut, tense thriller, him investigating, him going into kind of the underbelly of France, you know, finding criminals. That is not what the film is. The film is that for a certain portion, and then it basically takes place 4 months later. Over that time, he has settled into France. He lives with this woman and her young daughter. And it kind of becomes this family drama of him reconnecting with his daughter, which is fine. The film works very well that way. However, it kind of forgets about that whole investigative part of the story, the reason why I think a lot of people have come to pay a ticket to watch the film. So for me, I just felt like it struggled to balance tonally those two elements, kind of the thriller, the investigative side, and also the powerful drama side. You know, it doesn't quite balance it very well for me. But Matt Damon is excellent. Abigail Breslin, very good as well. I enjoyed it. Is it something I'm going to rush back and see? Probably not. It is a long film, and I did feel the length towards the end. It is nearly 2.5 hours, but yeah, I think if you've read up on the true story, if you're a fan of Damon, I think you'll enjoy it. What about you, Joe?
Yeah, I think it's important to note that it sort of is based on a true story. The filmmakers have said, obviously, that it is taken from the story of Amanda Knox, and she's been very vocal about her displeasure in the fact that, considering they've sort of taken inspiration from her, you know, awful story, that nobody made contact with her, nobody got in touch with her to talk about her experiences, what it was really like. And I think, you know, there's no justifying that. And I think, if anything, that could have given a film a more of an edge if they'd had got that first-hand experience from Amanda Knox and kind of fed it into Abigail Breslin's character. I think that could have made for something even more compelling. As it stands, I totally understand where you're coming from. And Matt Damon has said himself that he's not been best pleased with the marketing for the film because they have marketed it as a thriller, even though it is essentially a drama. I see it as a character piece, a character study of this American who has tattoos of like the bald eagle and a skull with a knife through it and is probably a Trump supporter, even though, you know, he didn't even bother to vote. And, you know, taking that character and putting him in these circumstances, a failed father in particular. I love films which deal with relationships between fathers and their children, failed relationships and trying to build those bridges back up. You know, I always sort of think of Thunder Road. There's a fantastic scene in that film by Jim Cummins, which released a couple of years ago, where he stays up all night just so that he can learn how to do like patty cake. Mm-hmm. And I love that sort of idea. I love those themes. So for me, I was really quite taken with this. I agree with you. There's certainly moments in that last act which could have just been left on the cutting room floor. It's true of every film, I guess. Like, it could easily have done with maybe another draft, you know, a good kind of 20 minutes trimmed off of the top, and I think it could have been even better. But I really enjoyed it. I think Matt Damon's performance is terrific. I think it's even better because it's so far removed from Jason Bourne. You know, Jason Bourne, where he's like walking into, like, he walks into a building, he's like, there are six cameras. There's one to the right of me, one to the back of me, and this is the best way out of here. And then he like punches a guy in the face, jumps under a train, and then just disappears. But this guy's like, excuse me, ma'am, can you help me with this Google?
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, ma'am. Like, I think he's just so far removed from that kind of action hero that I really enjoyed seeing him get that opportunity. Be interesting to see. We did talk about, like, maybe award season next year. Maybe it's a bit too early. Maybe he'll get overlooked. But I could actually see him being that random person which is just thrown in at the Academy. Everyone would be like, oh, yeah, I remember that a few months ago. So I think he's great. I think, and I think it does a good job of balancing. I think you're supposed to forget that the thriller sort of aspect of it, so that when it does come back into play, it packs even more of a punch because there are more stakes on the line. We went in not expecting anything either. So I think that helps. The fact that I walked in thinking, this is going to be a slow burner to the point where I'm going to fall asleep. Mm. I came out actually very pleasantly surprised, and I would gladly go watch it again.
I mean, I said my Hail Marys before I went in. I was like,
we had like a coffee.
Yeah,
and this is like 8 o'clock. We shouldn't be drinking coffee at 8 o'clock, but we were like, we're going to need this for that. But
speak for yourself. I do a midnight bonanza.
That explains a lot. That's why I get messages at 3 a.m. but yeah, I thought it was a solid piece of work, and I really, really enjoyed it.
Well, there we are. Stillwaters is in cinemas now. Moving on to our final film now. Joe, you had a chance to go have a little cry, didn't you, during this film? Be all romantic and emotional and get into all your emotions.
I did.
This is The Last Letter from Your Lover.
Yes, so The Last Letter from Your Lover, which is out today at the moment where we're releasing this. And this is based off of the book by Jojo Moyes, I think I'm saying that correct. Jojo Moyes. Yeah. Very popular book, apparently, although I've heard nothing of it. So it couldn't be that popular. It's not made an appearance in my book club. But no, it is a very popular book. And this is a pair of interwoven stories, basically. You've got two romantic stories, one set in the 70s, and it sort of follows Shailene Woodley's Jennifer Sterling, who's married to Joe Alwyn's Lawrence Sterling, and he's a rich businessman, very uptight, button-down collar type guy. Very parent friendly, you know?
Yeah.
And her parents are over the moon that she's with him, even though the marriage itself maybe not be all that great. And then,
Is he not performing in the bedroom?
Well, they don't go into that much detail, but I would probably say yes.
Oh.
And then one day she basically meets a journalist played by Callum Turner called Anthony O'Hare. He comes to do a profile on her husband. He's like, I've got business, darling. I've got to go. He goes, leaves them there. Rocky error. They start getting on.
kerfuffle.
They start getting on. They're going to spend the summer together, basically exploring all the beaches and everything like that, the Riviera.
That's how it starts.
Flash forward to modern day, you've got Felicity Jones. She's a journalist, and she stumbles upon the sordid little love letters that the pair have been sending to each other back and forth. And she is looking to uncover this romance, this very passionate, very dangerous secret romance. And in the process, maybe she'll find a little bit of love on her way.
Oh, that's sweet.
Here's a clip.
Mrs. Sterling, this just came for you.
Thank you.
Dearest Jay, please know that I was not rejecting you. I have never wanted to kiss someone so badly. But when you looked up at me, something changed. And in that moment, I feared our desires would destroy us. You're an honest, remarkable creature, and I did not want to be the man responsible for making you someone less than you are. For that reason, I have spent the last week hating myself for the one decent thing I have ever done. So consider this. Spontaneity is at the heart of many wonderful things, but it is also at the root of much discontent. And if we are to embark upon something, I ask only that we make this decision as one. I write these words with you in mind, and my heart swells. So, whatever the outcome, let us arrive together. You'll find me at Postman's Park on Friday at 6 p.m. I'll be there waiting. Yours, respectfully, B.
Oh, Mr. Darcy.
Callum Turner there, and I've not seen much of him before. I know he's in The Crown, but I've not watched The Crown. I was impressed. I was very, very impressed by him. And I was very impressed with the film overall, it's got to be said. And I feel awful because I think, like, what type of film fan am I where I see a trailer for a film and I'm like, oh, that looks dreadful. I remember we talked about it and I said, that looks just horrendous. Mm. I was going in fully expecting overly love fest and me being like very queasy.
You wanted to bring a bucket, didn't you, just in case?
Yeah, I wanted to bring a bucket. I thought it was going to be very middle of the road BBC on a Sunday evening.
Yeah.
And actually, I've seen a few people on Twitter say the same thing, saying, oh, it looks awful. It looks really cheesy. That said, I really, really enjoyed it. I came out of there and I thought, you know what? It's not reinventing the wheel.
No.
It's not doing anything different. But what it does do, it does really well. It's like when you go to see, you know, you could go see 100 churches, all right? And they can all be very nice. But you see one which has got like a nice stained glass window, which is a bit better than another, you know? You can tell they've put that little bit of extra effort. And what I really like about this is that the director, Augustine Frizell, she hasn't taken like the easy way out. She could have very much just chilled out, kind of just done a very bog standard ABC. But no, she's gone all out. She's gone to the effort of putting some really, really lovely shots in there. The cinematography is lovely. She's manages to get some pretty solid performances out of all the cast. I think Shailene Woodley in particular steals the show. Felicity Jones is as charming as ever.
Yeah.
And I came out and I thought, you know what? That like really charmed me. My heart is full.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really, really lovely. And I highly recommend it. Even if you've seen the trailers and gone, ooh, looks a bit sickly.
Ooh, yeah.
Give it a go.
Oh, definitely. Well, I'll definitely be seeing that. Definitely get some points from the girlfriend there, won't I?
Oh, you can't wait.
Brilliant. Well, there we are. That's in cinemas now. Almost end of the show. Before we go, though, it's time to play Two Truths and a Lie, baby.
Two truths and a lie. Two truths and a lie. Two truths and a lie.
Do you like that?
No.
No? Okay. Never doing that again. Here we go, everybody. So if you don't know the game, it's Two Truths and a Lie. I'm going to read Joe three facts from this week's releases. Unfortunately, no fact from the last letter of your lover. Sorry, that's the rules, not me. Four would be too difficult for you, I think. So two truths and a lie, three facts, two are true, one is a lie. Are you ready, Joe?
I am ready.
Right, try and see if you can get one right, okay?
You're such a...
Yeah, I think you might this week.
Okay.
Well, I hope and pray. Fact one. And this is about Stillwater now, okay?
Okay.
Abigail Breslin obtained her driver's license 2 weeks before shooting as one scene required her to drive a car. Okay, that's fact one. Fact two. Dave Bautista was initially considered for the role of Frank Wolf, but declined it, thus it being offered to Dwayne Johnson instead. Or fact three. In an interview, Margot Robbie has stated that she will happily play Harley Quinn for the rest of her career.
Right, so the Margot Robbie one is a truth.
Okay.
It's gotta be. Because I think she just loves that role.
Yeah.
And
so
I think
even when she's in her 80s, she'll still be doing it.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's just what people say, isn't it? She doesn't literally mean that she's gonna play Harley Quinn
she'll
in her
be in
80s.
Like diapers and nursing home.
You know, I don't think anybody would wanna see that. I don't think even Margot Robbie would wanna see
no,
that.
Maybe not.
But I think she loves that role so much. I would be shocked if that's a lie.
Yeah.
Although you could be double bluffing.
Okay, all right.
The thing, you know, you can't put anything past
you.
In terms of the Abigail Breslin, there is that scene in Stillwater where she has to drive a van, but, like, would she really go out and that would be the reason why she goes to get a driving license?
Well, you know what they say? If you have a good driving scene, you win an Oscar.
I mean, she's that scene is... I'm trying to think even if you see her driving in that shot.
Could be a very good stunt double.
Yeah. So, I mean, that is the one which is striking me so far as the lie. But then that would mean that Dave Bautista was initially approached.
It would, yeah.
And I can't see that happening either. Although, to be fair, Jungle Cruise is a bit ropey, so...
Yeah, that's offensive to him, isn't
no,
it?
I love Dave Bautista, but I could imagine them going, well, we don't need a top-tier guy. We can have, like, we can have the B-Tech rock.
Oh, whoa.
You know? So that would mean that would be the truth, though. Right, I think the lie is the Dave Bautista one, because I can't see Disney going to Dave Bautista and being like, we want you for Jungle Cruise. And I think if Abigail Breslin did go out and get a driving license for that small part, then well done her.
I got my driver's license last week. Okay, so...
lost it again.
This is embarrassing. You got it right.
Well, hey! I got one right.
It's coming home. It's coming home. Well done, mate. You can go home proud tonight. Yeah, correct. So the lie was, in fact, Dave Bautista was not approached. I mean, who needs him when you got the rocker? But Abigail Breslin, did she? I mean, she took the car driving seriously. She did her work.
That is method.
I don't think they can they, without a license, and even in a film. Well,
that's crazy that she went to that effort. I mean, maybe she was learning anyway, but that is crazy because it's literally like a 10-second moment in the
film.
And
what's even weirder, Vin Diesel can't even drive in. He doesn't have a driving license.
I mean, you're not going to get an Oscar for that, Abigail.
No, you're not.
Just because you learned to drive.
Oh, absolutely not. And that's all we got time for on today's show. It is flown by, isn't it? Oh, I just love it. But as always, please get in touch with, if you've seen any of the films we've spoken about in this week's show, Suicide Squad, Stillwater, you know, all the films we've talked about, Jungle Cruise, if you want to defend it against Joe, you know, get in touch with us. Tweet us at DJ Film Show on Instagram and Twitter. We're also on Facebook under the Dan Joe Film Show. And before we go, a special mention, we have had some donations to our Buy Me a Coffee, haven't we, Joe?
We have, yes.
So if you would like to buy us a coffee, feel free to.
Yeah.
All the links are on our page.
Yeah, so just go to buymeacoffee.com/DJ Film Show. If you've liked what you've heard today, then feel free to donate, buy us a coffee. We can use that money towards coffee or to help us, you know, get through the shows, especially when you're dealing with people like Dan. Or, you know, we can use it for other things to get better guests, things like that, to keep the show afloat. So, if you can, we would greatly appreciate it.
Coffee doesn't do it for you. For me, it's a bottle of red. I guess we do show. Buy me a bottle of red.
Yeah, where's that website?
Yeah, exactly. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you all next time. Stay safe and goodbye.
Bye-bye.